Our scripture reading this morning comes from the book of John, chapter 13, verse 1 through 8. That's John, chapter 13, verse 1 through 8. It was just before Passover festival. Jesus knew that the hour had come for him to leave this world and go to the Father. Having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. The evening meal was in progress, and the devil had already promoted Judas, the son of Simon Iscariot, to betray Jesus. Jesus knew that the Father had put all things under his power, and that he had came from God and was returning to God. For so he got up from the meal, took off his outer clothing, and wrapped a towel around his waist. After that, he poured water into a basin and began to wash his disciples' feet, drying them with a towel that was wrapped around him. He came to Simon Peter, who said to him, "Lord, are you going to wash my feet?" Jesus replied, "You do not realize now what I am doing, but later you will understand." "No," said Peter, "you shall never wash my feet." Jesus answered, "Unless I wash you, you have no part with me." May God add blessing to the reading of his word.
Secret in the quiet place. In the stillness, you are there. In the secret in the quiet hour, I wait only for you.
I'm absolutely delighted to be here with you today, and I understand that it's Pastor CJ's anniversary sometime around now. I don't know if it's exactly today or what, so he is enjoying some family time and celebrating his anniversary, so I'm glad I can sort of stand in for him, although his shoes are big to fill. We live in revolutionary times. We truly do. One definition of a revolution in the dictionary is a sudden, complete, or marked change in something. And I think we can all attest to the fact that life is changing all around us even as we speak. Technology is changing so rapidly that we can barely keep up. I mean, do you know that email is out and Twitter is in? Okay? Email is out and texting is in. It's changing. Everything is changing. But these aren't the first revolutionary times. There have been other revolutions. And I want to talk to you this morning about perhaps the most profound revolution that ever took place. You see, until that moment, the whole point of everything was for someone to get on top. And once you were on top, you either struggled to stay there or you tried to even get further to the top. But suddenly the world was faced with a man, a rabbi, a teacher, who said, being on top, being in charge, isn't what it's all about. It's about something else. It's about service and servanthood. And if you want to be first, you need to be last. The disciples must have been horrified when they realized that Jesus, as he exemplified servanthood, was setting an example for them. How horrifying must that have been? The author M. Scott Peck says this. He says, of all the people who ever lived, Jesus walked the road less traveled. And now he was asking his disciples to take this road as well, a road they had no desire to take at all. It was the road of humble service. Imagine the horror of that, to realize that Jesus is setting an example for you, and he's saying, I want you to take the road less traveled. The road of humble service. Because you see, we spend lifetimes and expend great energy attempting to get on top. And Jesus comes along and says, no, that's not the way to go. There's a different road. The road of service, the road of servanthood. When you read the gospel accounts, you discover that the disciples began what was to be their last evening with Jesus in that upper room with frowns on their faces and quarrelsome words on their lips, fighting amongst themselves. There was not peace and calm in that room with Jesus that night. There was bickering and fussing and fighting and complaining. And their quarrel wasn't about piety and charity and humility. Their quarrel was all about personal power and prestige. They were arguing about who was the greatest among the 12. Who was the greatest? Who was most loved by the master? Who would have the privilege to sit on his left hand or on his right hand in his kingdom? Luke 22, verse 24, the Bible says this, they began to argue among themselves about who would be the greatest among them. Jesus told them, in this world, the kings and great men lord it over their people, yet they are called friends of the people. But among you, it will be different. The road less traveled. Among you, it will be different. Those who are the greatest among you should take the lowest rank, and the leader should be like a servant. Who is more important, the one who sits at the table or the one who serves? The one who sits at the table, of course, but not here, for I am among you as one who serves. The road less traveled. What road are you on? Which road are you traveling? What are your priorities? What is important to you? And so they gathered to celebrate the Passover meal. And everything seemed normal until that moment. Until that moment. John chapter 4, verse 13. So he got up from the supper table, set aside his robe, and put on an apron. Then he poured water into a basin and began to wash the feet of the disciples, drying them with his apron. Everything seemed normal until that moment. And in that moment, the master became a servant. And as he spoke to them about what he was doing, it surely dawned on them that he was setting an example. And he was saying to them, I want you to take the road less traveled. And so in the fourth verse of John chapter 13, the story shifts from the ordinary to the extraordinary as Jesus does this scandalous thing. He strips himself down to a loincloth, the garment that a common slave would wear, and he washes his disciples' feet. He took the road less traveled. You see, the example that Jesus was setting is the antithesis of everything that we are taught, okay? It's the antithesis of it. You know, our world teaches us that we've got to get on top. And when we get on top, we've got to stay on top. And we've got to do whatever it takes to get there and stay there. That's what the world teaches us. And so Jesus' friends, those 12 men, in that room with him that night, misunderstood the nature of God's kingdom, the nature of Christ's kingdom, the nature of the kingdom that Christ was already establishing. They misunderstood the nature of it. I mean, you know, of course, right, that they were expecting and hoping for and praying that Jesus would set up a kingdom. And the reason for their argument was when he set up the kingdom, they wanted to know who would be the most important. And you understand that they weren't arguing about some future kingdom, you know, way up in the sky, in the sweet by and by. They were arguing because they expected a present revolutionary kingdom that would overthrow the kingdom of Herod and the kingdom of the Romans. So the argument was real to them because they wanted to know who was most important. And so Jesus' action is scandalous. It is scandalous. Jesus really lived a powerful example for us. What the disciples were faced with that night really was a crushing of their dreams. You see, they had seen in Jesus an opportunity for the downtrodden, they were the downtrodden, and the beaten, they were beaten, to finally get on top. And Jesus was their best opportunity as they sought to rise above the circumstances of their lives. Imagine a fisherman could become a prince. A tax collector could become a prime minister. That's what they thought. Have you ever felt like now is the opportunity for you to get on top? To be recognized, to be important, to be someone? Have you ever felt like it's your chance? I found this quote in the book Desire of Ages. The disciples clung to their favorite idea that Christ would assert his power and take his position on the throne of David. And in his heart, each still longed for the highest place in the kingdom. They had placed their estimate upon themselves and upon one another, and instead of regarding their brethren as more worthy, they had placed themselves first. Have you ever done that? Have you ever looked at someone maybe right here in this room and you have estimated yourself to be better than them, to be higher than them, to be somewhat different than them? Have you placed yourself first? Maybe even in your own family. You've placed yourself first. Estimated yourself to be better than someone else. You see, even the plot of Judas to have Christ arrested was a power play for greatness in the kingdom. Because you see, Judas assumed that when Jesus was faced with the prospect of arrest, that he would be forced in that moment to finally take his place of power and authority as an earthly prince or ruler. That was his assumption. Again, from the Desire of Ages, when the disciples entered the supper room, their hearts were full of resentful feelings. Judas pressed next to Christ on the left side. John was on the right. If there was a highest place, Judas was determined to have it. And that place was thought to be next to Christ. How can I get on top? How can I stay there? How can I have people regard me as someone who is important? In one decisive act, Jesus demonstrates that true greatness is not determined by position, it's not determined by prerogatives, it is not determined by education, it is not determined by titles, it is not determined by visibility. That's not what true greatness is about. In one decisive moment, Jesus demonstrates that greatness is determined by the willingness to meet the need of the moment with a deed of service. Did you get that? You can take it home with you. It's simple. Greatness is determined by the willingness to meet the need of the moment with a deed of service. That's it. Christ's formula for greatness: the willingness to meet the need of the moment with a deed of service. So in that upper room that night, the need of the moment was for a servant, a slave, to wash some dirty feet. That was the need of the moment. And so it's a comically tragic moment, Because you see, you have a bunch of illiterate fishermen from insignificant Galilean villages arguing about who is the greatest. That's what they're doing that night. They're arguing about who is the greatest, and the truth is, they're just fishermen. The Roman Empire didn't care about them. They were laborers. They were penniless. They followed a guy who was homeless, who didn't have a place to lay his head. And so there they were, privileged. Privileged to take part in perhaps the most important meal that anyone has ever eaten. And they're fighting about who's going to be the leader, who's going to sit closest to the master, which one of us does the master love the most. You know, in Judea of that day and time, feet were coated with dust and or caked with mud from when it rained, and the roads were traveled by horses and donkeys and goats and sheep. So you can imagine what the roads were like. Raw sewage was scattered everywhere. There weren't street sweepers or garbage picker-uppers. Your feet would get dirty. And so that's why if it was a decent household, there would be a copper jar and a pitcher of water by the door, and anyone who entered would have their feet washed. But that night, there was no servant. There was no one there. And not a single one of those 12 men would even think of taking off his Sabbath best and putting on an old pair of cutoffs and kneeling down and washing someone else's feet. I mean, who wanted to lower their position and prestige in the group? It has been observed that if you take 10 chickens, any 10 chickens, and if you put them in a pen together, and if you spread a little chicken feed, in short order, you'll witness an amazing phenomenon. These chickens, any 10 chickens, will vie for hierarchy based on dominance. In other words, they will establish a pecking order. Some one of those chickens will be more important than the others. So you have number one chicken and number two chicken and number three chicken. You get all the way down to number 10 chicken, who's got no one to peck on. Okay? He's just unlucky number 10. And you see, there's a lot at stake among chickens in this dance of domination. Living at the bottom of the pecking order is a miserable choice and a miserable life unless you choose to make that choice. Life at the bottom isn't cool unless, out of love, you make that choice. And there is someone here today who knows what I'm talking about, because you are on the bottom. You are picked on and pecked at by everybody else. The hopes and the aspirations of those 12 men were not much different from us today. No one wants to be chicken number 10. No one wants to be on the bottom. We all want to be on the top. We all want to be in charge. We all want to be able to tell somebody else what to do. I know that somebody here knows what I'm talking about today, because you just want to be able to tell someone else what to do, and you are longing to say to those 9 other chickens that are telling you what to do, get off my back. Leave me alone. So that evening, none of those 12 men could comprehend the kind of kingdom that Jesus was leading, the kind of kingdom that Jesus talked about. Because it wasn't about competition, and it wasn't about being on top, and it wasn't about being important. They didn't get that it was about a commitment. To Jesus and a commitment to each other. And even a cursory reading of the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, reveals that Jesus was extremely concerned and disturbed by religious leaders who paraded themselves around in fancy clothes and displayed their supposed spirituality. Jesus was concerned by that. Jesus was not concerned with how stuff looked on the outside. You hear that? He didn't care what it looked like on the outside. But he was concerned with the state of the inner man, the state of the heart, and the attitudes and behaviors that were expressed because of what was going on inside. What's going on inside of you? You see? What's going on inside of you? And what is being expressed outside because of what's happening inside? And you see, the disciples didn't get it. And they said to themselves, if no one else is going to wash these feet, I won't do it either. And so they sat at dinner with unwashed feet. Max Lucado describes the scene. This is how he describes it. As they argue, the basin sits in the corner, untouched. The towel lies on the floor, unused. The servant's clothing hangs on the wall, unworn. And each disciple sees these things. Each disciple knows their purpose, but no one moves except Jesus. You see, no one wanted to take the road less traveled. And you see, in your daily life, where you work, where you go to school, in your family, at home, right here in the church, somewhere on a wall, there is hanging a servant's clothing. And somewhere, there's a basin that is untouched, and there is a towel on the floor. And sadly, there may be no one willing to pick it up, or put it on, or use it. Lucado continues, as they bicker, he stands, but he doesn't speak. He removes his robe and takes the servant's wrap off of the wall. Taking the pitcher, he pours the water into the basin. He kneels before them with the basin and sponge and begins to wash. The towel that covers his waist is also the towel that dries their feet. And I submit to you that that was perhaps the greatest sermon that Jesus ever gave. A sermon without words. A sermon that he lived. And I submit to you that if you want to impact your world, wherever that world is for you, if you want to impact that world, it's more about what you live than what you say. It's more about that. It's more about taking that road that is less traveled. Imagine yourself in that room. You're all sitting around looking at each other. And every single person here knows what needs to be done. but no one makes a move to do it. The towel is there, the basin of water is there, the servant's clothes are there, but none of us move. In fact, we don't even dare look at each other, and we certainly won't look at Jesus. We don't want to catch his eye. You know that feeling, don't you? When you're in a room and you know that something needs to be done, and you don't want to catch the eye of anyone, most of all, the guy up front, because he might expect you to be the one to do it. And so Jesus waits. He waits to see who will serve. In that room that night, those men understood the unspoken rebuke as Jesus stood up, walked across the room, took down the servant's clothes, took off his own clothes, and prepared to serve them. He gave them an example they would never forget. A couple thousand years have passed since that night, but we still struggle with the same stuff those 12 men struggled with. The desire to be somebody. The desire to be noticed. The desire to be important. Somebody here knows what I'm talking about today, because you struggle with that right now. And even as you got up and came in here to church, what was on your mind was, what will they think of me? Will I be noticed? Will I be recognized as someone who is somebody? And so you're faced with the same question that those men were faced with. Will I take the road less traveled? That's what you're faced with. That's your question. When you leave here, when you go home, when you're on the job interacting with your interacting with the folks at work, or when you're at home interacting with your spouse or your child, or you're interacting with your boyfriend or your girlfriend, will you take the road less traveled? Will you meet the need of the moment with a deed of service? You see, the choice of servanthood, the choice to live out the example of Jesus, isn't something that you decide once for all. It's a choice that you've got to make over and over and over again. But you see, that's what it means to live out your friendship with Jesus. That's what being a Christian is all about. Following the Master, meeting the need of the moment with a deed of service. And it's amazing. You see, you can be a revolutionary. You can be an agent of change. You can change your world. You can change your church. You can change your community. You can change your family. You can change your marriage. You can change your relationship with your child or with your parent. You can do it. It's a choice. Will you meet the need of this moment and the next moment with a deed of service?